Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we celebrate 40 years of providing emergency response, and we'll introduce you to the new CEO of AmeriCares. We'll learn how this Connecticut-based nonprofit is representing our state around the globe and reel the conversation in to find out what AmeriCares is doing right here in cities across Connecticut. Then we'll touch base with the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven and get the latest on why this philanthropic powerhouse organization has decided to commit so much of its resources to New Haven Promise and its mission to expand access and opportunity for thousands of youth in New Haven, especially youth of color. And we'll close talking about a brand new partnership between Hazelden Betty Ford and Shatterproof and why this national partner has chosen to use Shatterproof's Just Five program for increasing awareness, reducing stigma, and sharing information about addiction prevention and treatment. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. A number of our Connoisseur Media stations are proud to be longtime sponsors of the annual Bowl to Benefit the Umbrella Center for Domestic Violence Services. It's coming up Saturday, March 7th at AMF Circle Lanes in East Haven. Umbrella is a program of BH Care that provides services for victims and children of domestic violence free of charge. Serving 19 towns in Connecticut, providing a 24/7 crisis hotline, walk-in centers, safe shelters, court support, community education, counseling, and so much more. Each year, over 7,700 victims and their children walk through the doors of the Umbrella Center looking for shelter, help, and hope. So lace up your bowling shoes, organize a team of friends, family, or coworkers, and learn more about the 32nd Bowl to Benefit and the important work of the Umbrella Center by clicking the events tab at bhcare.org. We also want to remind you, as we move through February, American Heart Month, that according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, heart disease is the leading cause of death in the United States. Coronary artery disease, or CAD, is the most common form of heart disease, and a number of screening tests are available for CAD, including calcium scoring with the cardiac CT. The Radiological Society of North America wants you to be informed about the ways in which heart disease can be detected early to ensure medical intervention has the best outcome. So the RSNA and the American College of Radiology encourages everyone to visit their free patient-focused website offering information about radiologic tests, treatment, and procedures that could save lives. To learn more, just go to radiologyinfo.org. So regular listeners to the program know that AmeriCares, based here in Connecticut, has been a perennial, or oftentimes more than a perennial, guest on the award-winning For the People. And we're always talking about things that are both familiar mission accomplishments or mission endeavors for AmeriCares. And for so long, we've talked with their former CEO or leaders of the organization. And now we're so pleased to welcome a new friend and contact for the program. AmeriCares recently announced that Executive Vice President and Chief Development Officer Christine Squires is going to be the next president and CEO of AmeriCares. She's really starting officially March 14th, but given her tenure with the organization, she tells me as we before we picked up the line that she's already hit the ground running, which is great. Christine, great to meet you. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, John. I appreciate it.
So let's talk a little bit about AmeriCares and just remind folks who may not be familiar with the incredible work that you've done both around the globe and as close to home as right here in Connecticut.
Sure. Thank you. So last year, AmeriCares celebrated its 40-year anniversary, excuse me. And we are focused on providing for health people, for people in the U.S. and all over the world affected by poverty or disaster. So that is our focus, and we respond to over 30 emergencies every year, and more we're focused on deepening our health program in the U.S. and globally.
Mm-hmm. So what's the latest hot spot that AmeriCares has gone running toward to provide aid, just mm-hmm. to give people some perspective on both how recent and how big the issues are that you folks are trying to respond to.
Sure. I mean, there are many. I'll try to focus on a few. I would actually start with Puerto Rico. So we responded to the Hurricane Maria in 2017 and with mental health programming, with health services, and we are still there and going to be there for the long term. We had been continuing our mental health and preparedness work, and then the earthquakes and aftershocks have struck, so we are still there providing services. And I mention that because oftentimes we think disasters are in and out, and the lifespan just continues to get longer.
Or that the help does parachute in after the disaster, not that they are embedded there when another disaster of a completely different nature happens.
Exactly. So we're glad we were there when this next disaster struck, and that we've had our mental health professionals on the ground, and also had done some preparedness training to the health centers that we're working with. We're also working in Colombia, dealing with the Venezuelan regional crisis. We have 10 clinics that we have along the border, and there were 20% of the patients we're seeing are pregnant women who we're helping, and we are provided health services to, at this point, over 150,000 patients.
Mm-hmm. How, I meant to ask before you switched to talking about Colombia, how is your team doing in Puerto Rico? Were there any impact or injuries as a result of the earthquakes, or were they forced to have to kind of unplug and partially or fully relocate from where they were based?
No, thank you for asking. Our team now is based in San Juan. We have been working in the Ponce area, which I know is affected by the earthquakes, but our team is fine, and they're really focused on providing help for others. Okay. But I do want to add, and this we saw this with Hurricane Maria, is that health workers often face two brunts of it. So they take things on personally, right, that affect them, but mm-hmm. they try to put that aside to help others. So so we talk about mental health and self-care as well, which is very important.
Mm-hmm. Now, as part of what the work that you're doing in places like Puerto Rico and Colombia, not just coming in with experts to provide the frontline assistance, but also at the same time either exposing or even training or working with others on the ground who are native to these organizations or countries, who will remain there kind of carrying on the practices that AmeriCares is so expert at once AmeriCares is gone?
Yes, exactly. So that is our model, is that we work with local health centers. We have partnerships all over the world that we've had enjoyed for many years. So we already have those connections. And what we do is embed in the community. We have, have hire local staff, work with the clinics to make sure that they can withstand, whether we're talking about a disaster or the next disaster, and train the folks there on the ground. So, we have some team that comes in and out, but we also are working with folks there and very much understand the local context and what the needs are. So not in part different thinking, but really what's going to work in that environment.
Yeah. Sadly, we also recognize there are organizations, AmeriCares among the leading ones, who see issues happening and see a need for your services in certain parts of the world where it might just be too risky or dangerous to insert your team into those regions. At this point, from your perspective, Christine, are you looking at any points on the globe where it's frustrating to you because you really see a place where AmeriCares can make a significant positive difference, but it's just not appropriate at this time to commit resources to it?
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting question. We actually do work in I'd say, you know, some risky environments where obviously we do a security assessment every time before we go in. But I think what, I guess, from the part that might be frustrating is that there's so much need around the world, and a lot of the focus and attention is what's, you know, written in the headlines. But there's, you know, in the Congo, in Central Africa Republic, there's dire health needs there. And, you know, we're not currently there, but those are areas that we are looking at.
Very good. Well, before we go too much further talking about AmeriCares and moving forward and how people can support your work, let's just take a few moments to focus on you. You've been with the organization, but what's your background and how did you first come into the nonprofit sector? Is AmeriCares your first professional venture into the nonprofit world?
Actually, no. Over maybe almost 25 years, which is a little frightening to say, that I've been in the nonprofit world. And my first job in the nonprofit world was with UNICEF USA, which is where actually our CEO, Michael Neinheis, is going now to lead. So I was there for 10 years and, you know, coming in from the retail world and just absolutely loved the organization and felt great about having the opportunity to make an impact on the lives of children. So that's where I started and then worked in different organizations over the years, including Human Rights Watch and Physicians for Human Rights, where I was COO before I came to AmeriCares. So I've been really fortunate to be able to work with some amazing organizations, and which all led up to this.
Are there any programs or projects or ideas that you had in your previous areas of employ that you have either already been able to bring to bear at AmeriCares, or maybe part of your planning of where to take the organization as it moves forward?
That's a great question. I think something I want to continue to do is strengthen our health programming, the U.S. and globally. And I emphasize globally because, you know, AmeriCares, we are based here in Stanford and have 125 staff here, but we actually have over 500 staff all over the world. And so as we grow to be a more global organization, I want to make sure we're focused there and we operate like one. So I think that's something that I've, you know, taken with me from UNICEF and also Human Rights Watch, what they think did that successfully.
What are some of the other things that you're looking at in terms of either expanding, strengthening, or implementing even as you take official duties over in mid-March?
The other thing I think we're really well poised to do is we want to really further build the awareness of the great work AmeriCares is doing. We are, you know, well known here in Connecticut and a bit in the tri-state area, but I think we have an opportunity to strengthen our base of support nationwide and locally. So I really want to get the word out about AmeriCares, and I thank you for your part in doing that.
Yeah, well, for our listeners throughout here in Connecticut, across on Long Island and in neighboring states who receive our radio stations on the air, and the many people who tune in to keep tabs to our podcasts, either on our station websites or on iTunes. Could you talk a little bit about kind of how we can reel this back to home and how AmeriCares is actually initiating or supporting programming right here in Connecticut?
Absolutely. So we have four free clinics that we own and operate in Connecticut, Danbury, Bridgeport, Norwalk, and Stamford. And we serve thousands of patients each year who are uninsured or underinsured. And we also partner with their corresponding local hospitals for diagnostic services for these patients. So this is really quality care and total care so these patients can continue to be healthy, productive, and support their families. So that's some of the great work that we're doing right here in Connecticut. We are also in our Stamford facility, have a wellness center, which we're going to be launching, again, focused on total health. So very excited about that. And being located here in Stamford, we also have our warehouse right attached to our office, our distribution center, which sends critical medicines and medical supplies to the 90 countries that I was talking about earlier. And we have volunteer opportunities here to come and put together first aid kits to send to be prepared when the next disaster strikes and to stock our shelves.
Great. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because for folks who are unable to or not in a position immediately to be able to write a check to support your work, it's wonderful to know that there are volunteer opportunities available with your organization so that they can give you the gift of time and really kind of make a difference locally and globally. But with that in mind, could you just remind people of the breakdown in terms of the amount of each dollar that a person would give that is actually devoted to frontline programming, and how folks can give, and maybe a word or two about where their dollars will go?
Sure. So it's 97%, and want to emphasize that because we are able to distribute donated medicines and medical supplies, again, all over the world, over 4,000 health centers. When a donor gives a dollar, that is actually $20 of value. So that money is really leveraged to provide these critical supplies and also health programming to health facilities around the world. If they had to buy these medicines or medical supplies out of their own budgets, that that would be more than half their budget. So I thank everybody for their support, because they really are providing much, much needed relief.
Excellent. Thank you. AmeriCares is a health-focused relief and development organization based right here in Connecticut that, as you hear, is saving lives and improving health for people affected by poverty or disaster or just economics, as close as some of your neighbors right here in our state. Every year, AmeriCares reaches more than 90 countries, including the United States, with these health programs, medicine, and medical supplies. Your support, either in dollars or in your volunteer efforts, can make a difference. AmeriCares is the world's leading nonprofit provider of donated medicine and medical supplies. And if you'd like to learn more or find out how you can help, you can go to AmeriCares.org. We're so thrilled to be able to have this early stage conversation with the organization's brand new CEO, Christine Squires, president and CEO, I should say, Christine Squires. And she's taking the official seat on March 14th. We congratulate you, Christine, and really look forward to talking with you more in the future about the great work of AmeriCares and how you're going to make a difference with this organization. So thanks for checking in with us right now. It's always great to check in with William Ginsberg. Will has served as president and chief executive officer of the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven since 2000. This organization has really been working some incredible magic. The Community Foundation for Greater New Haven is a philanthropic institution established in 1928 as a permanent charitable endowment. And for more than three generations, countless donors have built that community endowment by establishing permanent funds, making gifts to existing funds that distribute grants to a broad variety of issues and organizations. And as we have heard in so many other interviews, under Will's leadership, particularly, this organization has really pushed the envelope in moving philanthropy into making such critical and important differences in all of the communities that it serves. And we're here to talk about more of that excitement today. So, Will, always great to be a platform for you to help promote this incredible work. But before we get into some of the specifics, can you just expand on that a little bit and talk about how the philanthropy of individuals and families are still working to help you help the communities where they live?
Absolutely, John, and thank you for those very nice, gracious comments. I will say, if it's true that we work magic in this community, it's only because this community is and has long been extraordinarily generous This is a there's a powerful sense of community in Greater New Haven. There's a powerful belief in ourselves in Greater New Haven, and there's a powerful sense that if we work together, we can meet our challenges and move forward and seize new opportunities. And that's what the Community Foundation. That's why we exist, and it's why we were created 92 years ago, and it's why three generations of generous New Haveners, New Haven individuals and families, people from here, people who believe here, people who want to leave a legacy to benefit the future, have created this resource, which has grown to about $675 million as of the end of 2019, which is remarkable testament, not to us at the foundation, but to the generosity of this community and the belief that this community has in itself and its own future. So, you know, the foundation today is about 1,000 separate funds, some that go back to 1928, some that were created this week. And 2019 was reaffirmation that this community remains deeply generous and in support of itself. About $35 million came in gifts and what we call charitable transfers to the Community Foundation in this past year. So it's one of our strongest years ever from a revenue standpoint in terms of new monies coming in. And again, that is some of them very small gifts. And you go to the Great Give, which we do every year in May, which is our 36-hour giving extravaganza, which has gifts as little as $5 up to some very large gifts this past year. So from very dedicated local philanthropists. So so this remains, a resource for our community and as I said, testament to what our community is all about.
Yeah, I know I've said it to you before, but I think a lot of people have the impression that community foundations, including significant ones like in Greater New Haven, they do these kind of smaller strategic things, certainly people that may be recipients of services from agencies that have gotten Community Foundation grants, or even individuals that work, at those treetops really may only tend to see the benefits that come their way. But when you hear about your total endowment and that massive amount of money and the money that you're just talking about having come in the past year, it does not seem as unusual to me that you have decided to allocate and commit $1.3 million, which will be metered out over 5 years to New Haven Promise. And so let's use that as the jumping off point to the beginning of our conversation here. First of all, tell us about how you and the Community Foundation recognized New Haven Promise and why this much at this time in history between the foundation and this organization?
Right. So we've been involved with New Haven Promise from the beginning. In fact, we've been involved in New Haven Promise since before the beginning, because we were part of the team convened by then Mayor DeStefano in 2010 to flesh out this idea of New Haven Promise based on models from Pittsburgh and Kalamazoo, Michigan, and a couple of other places that were doing Promise-like programs. So, and actually, Promise started as part of the foundation. So Promise started at the end of 2000, actually technically started January 1st, 2011. So it's in its 10th year now. And it started as part of the Community Foundation. For the first 6 years, it was a program of the Community Foundation. Patricia Melton, who's the president of New Haven Promise, and her predecessors were staff of the foundation. It didn't spin off as a separate nonprofit till I think 2016. So we've been there from the beginning. Since 2011, Promise has been our largest grant. We believe in Promise. We believe in the impact that it has. Hundreds and hundreds of families, thousands of young people in New Haven, who to prepare them for college, to get the skills they need to thrive in the world we're living in and in the economy we're living in. To succeed in college, and importantly, to come back to New Haven after college.
So it really seems to me that this is the perfect intersection of former longtime initiatives or more recent initiatives to begin to have a much bigger impact on both education and economic sustainability, both in the region, state, and really throughout the Northeast.
I think that's exactly right. And I think because I was just speaking to the continuity out over a decade, I will say something else, which is Promise started as a school reform initiative. It was part of the city of New Haven and the New Haven Public Schools, what was called School Change, which was their school change initiative in 2009, 10, 11, 12, in that period. Today, from our standpoint, Promise is obviously making a huge contribution to public education in New Haven, but it's also about how we create opportunity. So as the Community Foundation's new strategic plan, we spent 2019 in a planning year. We have a new strategic plan that took effect January 1st, 2020. And it's all built around the idea of creating opportunity, of how do we grow our economy and how do we make sure that the growth of our economy benefits all the people in this community. And Promise is at the heart of that, because if we are going to If the people of our community, the young people who are going to getting their educations in New Haven are going to benefit from the kinds of investments and things that are happening in our community now, like this new neuroscience center that Yale New Haven Hospital, the largest project ever built in New Haven. They're going to build an $840 million neuroscience center on Sherman Avenue on the St. Raphael's campus. How is that going to benefit the people of the young people in New Haven over the next generation? And the answer is, they need the education. It's not all going to be PhDs and MDs, but you need a college education for so much of this work today. And there's actually an article in the New Haven Independent today about a study that was just completed about the kinds of jobs that are going to be created through making New Haven a global neuroscience destination. So Promise fits into all of that. And it's been at the center of our grant making for the last decade, and it's going to be at the center of our of how we think strategically about what this community needs out over the next 5 years, which is our new strategic plan.
Great. And as part of that, a major initiative is inclusive economic growth. We're going to come back and spend the second half of our chat with Will Ginsberg of the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven, talking more about that and the synergy between that and their strategic plan. Give us just a moment. Stay with us, and we'll tell you a lot more about this exciting news just after this break. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations that would love to have your support. You can learn about a number of them through LoveCT, and if you run, work for, or volunteer for a qualified nonprofit, apply now for a chance to receive a $5,000 radio contract to promote your event or your nonprofit brand. Just go to our radio station website, hit the Events tab, and click on to LoveCT to apply for the grant and to help them any causes supported by Connoisseur Media. Hey, I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. There's always something wild happening at Connecticut's only zoo. Hey, do you know a teenager 14 to 18 interested in learning more about zoos and zoo careers? Then connect them to this year's Zoo Career Explorers post at the Beardsley Zoo. They'll investigate zoo careers from animal care to development and marketing to visitor services and maintenance to zoo director. Explorer post members attend career workshops with hands-on activities, take part in job shadowing, develop a public presentation, and create a year-end project. You can learn more by visiting beardsleyzoo.org/explorers or hit beardsleyzoo.org to find out about everything happening at Connecticut's only zoo. We're back with William Ginsberg. Will is president and CEO of the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven. He's been a regular, if not perennial, guest on the award-winning For the People now.
And happy to be so.
Right. And it's been, 20, 20-ish years, maybe more.
20 years.
Right?
Yep.
So, and yet we've never, and I don't know that we've ever personally met, but it is just so great to talk to you because it's always incredible and exciting news coming out of your organization. So as you were talking about and leading up to this strategic plan, you know, they say if you want to get something done, ask a busy person. So I'm sure when the news dropped that you would be heading up a new strategic plan, you barely blinked. Right.
Well, it's important for us and it's important for any organization to have a sense of where it's going and where it wants to get to. And I think it's a recognition that that in the world at large and in our community here in Greater New Haven, you know, the world is changing. And we're living in an age of which is defined in large part, I think, by inequality. You know, it's a very prosperous time, but not everyone keeps up. And the wealthy are getting wealthier, and lots of people are getting left behind. That's true in the United States. It's true in Connecticut, and it's true in our community. At the same time, New Haven is growing. We're seeing investment in this community. We're seeing a potential for growth, and we're seeing growth that we haven't seen, I would say, in our lifetime. So we need to capitalize on that because Connecticut's been growing too slowly, and our community's been growing too slowly for a generation.
Yeah,
those dynamics are changing now.
And I was going to say, the other point is, depending on the tweets you read or the circles that you run in, you keep hearing this sort of echo of, you know, there's virtually, you know, unemployment is virtually gone. In fact, there may be, you know, as many as 1.5 to 2 jobs for every person that might be available to do them. And yet there is this disparity across populations, including right here in Connecticut and the greater New Haven region. So tell us what the foundation hopes to do as part of its strategic planning process to implement this successful formula of inclusive economic growth.
Well, so we've adopted our plan and we're launched. I think, you know, we're not a business entity, obviously, and we're not a big job creator. But our core message is that to the social sector, which we work with, the nonprofit sector, is that we will never achieve the social progress that we all aspire to in New Haven and Greater New Haven without more rapid growth. And so the social sector needs to get behind the growth agenda. And at the same time, we will never create a consensus for growth without people believing at every level of our community that growth will benefit everybody. So the business sector needs to get behind this idea of equity and inclusion. And if we come together as a community, build on our assets, starting with the bioscience assets that relate to Yale Medical School and Yale New Haven Hospital, but build on our assets, our economic assets, create growth, create opportunity for people, and do the things like New Haven Promise, and there's a lot, and job training programs and other things that we support, do the things that will make sure that growth creates jobs at all levels of the community. That's how we can move forward as a community. That's how we can bring people together to envision and to achieve an even brighter future than we've had. So that's the core vision. And as I said, this announcement of our new 5-year grant to New Haven Promise tied into our new 5-year strategic plan puts our education system giving kids the education they need and the skills they need both in New Haven Public Schools, in college, and to come back here to take advantage of the opportunities that growth in this community can create.
So am I oversimplifying when I suggest that the carrot is not the reward that comes from gainful employment? The carrot is really getting the education to inspire individuals to you know, seek out their best purpose. And if they are educated, that will, for the most part, naturally kind of come organically?
Well, yes, but I think employment is a key part of this. And I think that the, you know, as an entity that is invested deeply, like Yale and the hospital and others, in New Haven Promise, the return on that investment for this community is going to be if we can keep these young people who we've invested in, we've invested in their education and we've invested in them, if they come back to our community and are employed here and build their lives and contribute to this community as productive citizens you know, over the next generation. That's the return on the investment. These kids are through Promise, through the education they're getting in New Haven Public Schools and through Promise, they will be well positioned for employment in this economy. But it doesn't benefit our community if they're moving to New York or Austin, Texas, or sure, California or Chicago, because that's where the opportunities are. And Connecticut's grown too slowly, and our community's grown too slowly. The data points to that. So this is about employment, but it's about making sure that our community is building on its assets in a way that create the opportunities that'll keep the next generation here and engage the next generation in the life of this community.
I also think it's really cool and smart that you've recognized as part of the goal system, you're recognizing that we, for good or ill, we're in a gig economy, and that one of the three tenets of the strategic plan is supporting the development of what you're calling an inclusive entrepreneurial ecosystem.
Yes.
That is so critically important because, so many of us, are really, really have to be self-sustaining in the work that we do, even if it's under the umbrella of our greater calling.
Yes, and that is an important part of our plan, and we're working with, there are a lot of successful entrepreneurs in our community. There are a lot of organizations, businesses and other organizations that want to promote entrepreneurialism. You know, it's one of the paths to opportunity. It's not just about the big institutions. It's about the big institutions, but it's also about the dynamism of creating new business institutions. Everything from, you know, very small scale commercial stuff in neighborhoods in New Haven, up to technology businesses that are going to drive our economy forward. But entrepreneurial activity, like so many things in our society, is not particularly inclusive. And people of color and women entrepreneurs have not been in the mainstream of being able to access capital and being able to build the kind of businesses we're talking about. So our efforts are going to focus in particular on people of color as entrepreneurs and women as entrepreneurs, not exclusively, but in particular, because it's all part of building a sense that we can all benefit from creating more opportunity in our community.
And part of getting to that success goal is recognizing and dealing with some of the barriers, which we really need to kind of talk about in the last few minutes that we have, Will. We talked about this disparity. Everybody thinks there's more jobs than there are people to fill them, and yet we know that there are large tracts of individuals who may not be getting the jobs or the quality of jobs that they want to or need to have. What are a couple of the barriers that you will be dealing with under this greater umbrella?
Well, I think certainly education. I mean, I think it starts with education, and it starts with quality education at the secondary level, and then giving people the support they need to get to college. This is where Promise comes in, and giving people the support they need to succeed in college, and creating the connection so they can find employment in our community in summers during college and after college. So I think the pathway to that pathway is essential, and we need to invest in that pathway. And it's not only for people for whom college is the right path. It's training for people who aren't going to go to college. So, you know, we're supporting under the same heading, we're supporting the new Holberton School over at District on James Street, which is training software developers. You don't need a college education for that, but you can graduate from that training program, and people are being hired with salaries of $60,000 and $70,000. So we're not talking about the minimum wage economy there, far from it. So I think those are the issues. And we also have to recognize that that race and ethnicity and gender play in here, that the playing field is not level, that these are issues that these disparities exist. The very clear racial and ethnic disparities in in this country, in the world, but certainly in our community. So there have to be very deliberate efforts to make sure that all of these, that everything we're doing takes that into account, and that we're conscious of it, and that we, not only as a community foundation, but the whole community is committed to addressing those issues too, and doing better in that regard as well.
Great way to end the conversation for now, Will. The Community Foundation for Greater New Haven is one of the oldest and largest community foundations in the United States, and remains the largest grant maker in its 22-town region in the heart of Central Connecticut. Our guest this morning and frequent guest on the award-winning For the People, Will Ginsberg, President and CEO of the Community Foundation, really focusing on their latest initiative with strategic plan fresh out of the oven and goals to build community-wide ownership for regional inclusive growth, supporting inclusive career pathways in local growth sectors, and equally important, supporting the development of an inclusive entrepreneurial ecosystem. Will Ginsberg, thank you once again for your great work and the work of everyone, as you said, from the $5 donor on up to the multi-generational contributor who's going to help make this all happen. And as it goes in the greater New Haven region, we hope it spreads throughout Connecticut, and perhaps we become a place where other states and localities look to as a model, in part due to the work that you're doing. So thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again
soon.
John,
thank you. I really appreciate it. As always, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks so much.
Well, we have been very pleased to be able to work with an organization here in Connecticut called Shatterproof, which is actually a national nonprofit dedicated to reversing the addiction crisis in the United States by transforming addiction treatment, shattering addiction stigma, most importantly, and advocating for federal and state policy change and payer reform, also supporting and educating the community. And we were so pleased just a short time ago to receive notice that Shatterproof is now going to be partnering with the Hazelton Betty Ford Foundation, utilizing a resource for families that has been successfully implemented by Shatterproof. We have their Executive Vice President, Stephen D'Antonio, on the phone with us this morning to talk about it. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here, John, and thank you for the kind introduction.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and your role at Shatterproof.
Sure. So I did not start in the addiction space. I had a 30-year business career at Morgan Stanley, where I ran global trading businesses. I was also a member of their 40-person management committee. And then along the way, one of my five children ended up having a problem with substances, a very serious addiction problem. And as many people know, with this problem, your head spinning as a parent, there's so much fear and so many things going on. And I decided to retire and really get into the addiction space and learn as much as I could learn as much as I could about the disease, and then try and help as many people as possible. And I've done that over the last few years, becoming a parent peer volunteer or creating a position at Northwell Health outpatient clinic in Long Island. I created a podcast series with a top treatment center called Karen Treatment Center. I co-created it with two other friends. I also spent a year at Harvard University doing a fellowship to learn how to create scalable social change and to take grad level courses in addiction. And then I found my way to Shatterproof. I met Gary Mendel, and that was another life changer.
Great. Well, we've described what Shatterproof has been doing. So tell me a little bit about how the connection between Shatterproof and Hazelton Betty Ford happened.
Sure. So as you probably know in talking to Gary, Shatterproof has deep connections with a lot of business organizations, one of which is Optum, Optum Behavioral Health, which is part of the United Healthcare system. And there's an amazing person there named Deborah Nussbaum, who has big responsibilities in trying to help reverse the opioid epidemic as well. And I had a relationship with her prior to Shatterproof. She has deep relationships with treatment centers. And she basically put Hazelden Betty Ford and Shatterproof together because she thought there would be a good partnership. And the partnership is really all about the fact that Hazelden has great services and things that they can provide for people who are ready for treatment, but they don't have anything really for families that are just getting started. And so our training is all about people who are in those very, very early stages that maybe aren't sure there's a problem or they just don't know where to begin. Hazel gets tens of thousands of calls per year, and a good portion of them are not ready for any kind of services. And so what Hazelden is going to do is take this training and deliver it to those callers who could benefit from an educational experience.
So this is part of the reason why that collaboration idea made so much sense from Shatterproof's perspective?
Yeah, so we are going to collaborate with them on other things. It's obviously a big name in the business, huge brand, but this was a very direct, important business idea and relationship. And so we literally signed a deal. I got the legal agreement from Hazelden on Thanksgiving Day. We signed the deal then, and we've been working on implementing it up until the recent press release.
Very good. So then I guess the next important thing to talk about is Just Five. Give us an overview of that program and how successful it's been for Shatterproof's audience.
Sure. So I'm going to go high level. I started with this notion that people's heads are spinning, when they first have an inkling that there might be a problem with addiction. And the problem with resources that are out there is that they're overwhelming. Even for me, after spending a year studying it, I would go onto websites and it was just too much stuff. And so when I showed up at Shatterproof and collaborated with their incredible team, the idea was let's create something that is highly curated and is only the best, most important stuff that people should know that they don't know. And so we ended up creating 6 lessons. That's it. 5 minutes a piece. That's why it's called Just Five. And it's meant for the world that we live in today where people don't have any time. They have very short attention spans. So each lesson just takes 5 minutes. I could go through the quickly, spend a minute.
Sure. They can do this online, on their phones, on their tablets, wherever they 100%. Are. I mean, for the amount of time it takes to go out and maybe, have a smoke or take a break in a quiet place for a cup of coffee, they can benefit from one of the segments of this program.
John, that's exactly right. We designed it so that it looks very good on a computer, but we really designed it for a phone. Because this is it's such a stigmatized thing that people really want to access information in the most private way possible. And so, on their commute home, on their phone, it's designed in that way. You could do any one of the 6 lessons, in 5 minutes. So the 6 topics are the first one is the science of addiction. Half the country thinks that addiction is a personal failing. It turns out that there's neuroscience behind it that shows the brains are actually restructured. And so we deliver that message in an animation, and then we have expert testimony talking about it. The second topic is who's at risk? Who's vulnerable? And it turns out the most vulnerable population are people that have other mental illnesses and also the young, adolescents, because their brains are not fully formed. And so we go through all of that. Then we have a whole segment on opioids, because obviously with tens of thousands of people dying every year in this country with opioid overdoses, there's a lot to learn in that arena. Then probably the most valuable thing that we have is lesson 4, where we introduce something that I had no idea about until it was mentioned in pretty much every class I took in the fellowship learning about addiction. And that is a diagnostic called DSM-5. That's the gold standard. It was created by the American Psychiatric Association, and it's 11 yes or no questions that basically tell people whether or not they have no problem, a little problem, a medium problem, or full-blown addiction. and it's simple language. We introduce it, and I wish everybody in America could become familiar with those 11 questions. Because the biggest reason why people don't seek help is they don't think they have a problem. If you read those 11 questions and answer them honestly, you'll know. And then the last two lessons are how to help somebody who has a problem. And the final lesson is recovery, because there are so many dark and negative stories about addiction, but there are millions of people in this country that have beautiful, uplifting stories about recovery. And so we wanted to make sure that we introduced that topic with three very relatable, uplifting stories of darkness and then recovery and just unbelievable lives that people are living.
Wonderful. And the other exciting thing that we can hit in the last couple minutes that we have with you, Stephen, is how Shatterproof can and is working with employers, not sure. just here in Connecticut, but anywhere within the sounds of our voice, to integrate and make this program kind of subtly available to anyone in their workforce.
Sure. Well, I can just tell you the first company that rolled it out with us was in October. We finished the program. It was JP Morgan Chase. They rolled it out globally. Connecticut's own, the Hartford Insurance, is rolling it out in the next week. GE has rolled it out. Optum Behavioral Health has rolled it out. Highmark Health. So we have a local union in New York City, 16,000 members. We have a state, the state of North Dakota. And so I, frankly, have been shocked at how overwhelming the response has been. We have 15 companies and employers that have signed, another 50 in the queue. And it turns out there's really not any competition for a product that's really designed for organizations to roll it out to their individual constituencies. Each organization gets their own landing page and their own URL for the training, and so they can customize that for their population, which is a big deal. And then we provide other stuff. I mean, really, it's meant to be turnkey, because having worked at Morgan Stanley for 30 years, I know people get interested in stuff, but they just don't have time. And so we've made it turnkey by creating all the marketing materials. Companies really have to do very little to get access to this training. It's anonymous. We just give them their own URL and they roll it out to their employees.
Fantastic. Well, for folks joining us, we're talking with Stephen D'Antonio. He's executive VP of Shatterproof, which is dedicated to reversing the addiction crisis in the United States. We're helping them with their rollout of their new Just Five online education program, which we're hearing is aimed at helping more people learn about the disease of addiction and, if possible, facilitating getting assistance for those folks. The other exciting piece of news, as the nation's largest nonprofit treatment provider, Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation is going to use Shatterproof's Just Five as a resource for families who call its helpline and could benefit from an initial education on addiction. Your company and your employee workforce can also benefit from it, as we heard from Stephen, so many are. If you'd like more information about this or to learn all there is to know about this great organization, just go to shatterproof.org and we'll get you started. Thanks so much for chatting with us this morning, Stephen, and we look forward to following up with you at some point in the next few months and see how this rollout is really making a difference. So for now, we say farewell and thanks for being on the program, and we'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.